Bartimaeus, Chapter 15. Picture the scene. London in the rain. Grey sheets of water tumbled from the sky, breaking upon the pavements with a roar louder than cannon fire. A strong wind buffeted the rain this way and that, blowing it under porches and eaves, cornices and capstones, drowning each possible refuge with a freezing spray. There was water everywhere, bouncing off the tarmac, swilling along the gutters, congregating in basement corners and above the drains. It overflowed the city's cisterns. It cascaded horizontally through pipes, diagonally across roof slates, vertically down walls, staining the brickwork like sweeping washes of blood. It dripped between joists and through cracks in ceilings. It hung in the air in the form of a chill white mist, and above, invisibly, in the black reaches of the sky. It seeped into the fabric of buildings and the bones of their cowering inhabitants. In dark places underground, rats huddled in their lairs, listening to the echoes of the drumming overhead. In humble houses, ordinary men and women closed the shutters, turned lights full on, and clustered about their hearth fires with steaming cups of tea. Even in their lonely villas, the magicians fled the endless rain. They skulked to their workrooms, bolted fast the iron doors, and conjuring clouds of warming incense, lost themselves in dreams of distant lands. Rats, commoners, magicians, all safely under cover. And who could blame them? The streets were deserted. All London was shut down. It was close to midnight, and the storm was getting worse. No one in their right mind would be out on a night like this. Ho-hum. Somewhere, amid the driving rain, was a place where seven roads met. In the centre of the crossroads stood a granite plinth, topped by an equestrian statue, a large man on a horse. The man waved a sword, his face frozen in the midst of a heroic cry. The horse was rearing up, back legs splayed, front legs out. Perhaps it was signalling dramatic defiance. Perhaps it was preparing to hurl itself into battle. Perhaps it was simply trying to dislodge the fat bloke on its back. We'll never know. But see, under the belly of the horse, sitting right at the centre of the plinth, its tail tucked elegantly against its paws, a large grey cat. The cat affected not to notice the bitter wind that rippled its sodden fur. Its handsome yellow eyes gazed out steadily into the murk, as if piercing the rain. Only the slight downward tilt of its tufted ears signalled dissatisfaction with its circumstances. One ear flicked occasionally, otherwise the cat might have been carved from stone. The night darkened. The rain intensified. I tucked my tail in grimly and watched the roads. Time trickled on. Four nights is not a particularly long time, even for humans, let alone for us higher beings from the other place, where time, strictly speaking, doesn't exist. Or, if it does, only in a circuitous, non-linear sort of way. Look, it's a complicated concept, and I'd love to discuss it with you, but perhaps now's not quite the best moment. Remind me about it later. Yet the last four nights had really dragged. For each of them, I had been patrolling the central regions of London, hunting for the unknown marauder. I had not been alone, admittedly. I had the company of a few other unlucky gin and a barrel load of Folliots. The Folliots, in particular, had caused incessant trouble, forever trying to bunk off by hiding under bridges or slipping down chimneys, or getting startled out of their skins by thunderclaps or one another's shadows. Literally so, I'm afraid, or rather messy and inconvenient. It was all one could do to keep them in line. And all the while it had rained continually, hard enough to cause a canker in one's essence. Nathaniel, needless to say, had not been sympathetic. He was under pressure himself, he said, and he needed results soon. In his turn, he was having difficulty marshalling the small group of magicians from his department who were providing the other gin for the patrols. Reading between the lines, they were openly mutinous, disliking being ordered around by an upstart of a youth. And let's face it, who could blame them? Nevertheless, each night, Gin and Folliots alike assembled glumly on the grey slate roofs of Whitehall, and were directed out on our patrols. Our aim was to protect certain prominent tourist regions of the city, which Nathaniel and his immediate superior, a certain Mr. Tallow, considered under threat. A list of possible sites was given to us. Museums, galleries, swanky restaurants, the aerodrome, shopping arcades, statues, arches, and other landmarks. Taken in toto, it pretty much accounted for most of London. This meant we had to work our interlocking circuits continuously all night to have any chance of keeping check. Not only was this tedious and tiring, and very wet, it was also an unnerving business, since the nature of our opponent was both mysterious and malign. Several of the more nervy Folliots began a whispering campaign straight away. Our enemy was a rogue Afreet. It was worse, a married. It wrapped a cloak of darkness round it at all times, so its victims could not see their death approaching. No, it destroyed buildings with its breath. I've known magicians with similar powers, especially first thing in the morning. It carried with it the odour of the grave that paralysed human and spirit alike. To improve morale, I tried starting a counter-rumour that it was nothing but a small imp with a grouchy personality. But this sadly didn't stick. The Folliots, and a couple of the gin, went out into the night wide-eyed and tentative of wing. One small bonus for me was the appearance, among the gin, of none other than my old associate from my days in Prague, Queasel. She was newly enslaved to one of the other magicians in Nathaniel's department, a sour and desiccated individual named Fuchs. Despite his strict regime, however, Queasel retained her old vigour. We made it our business to hunt together wherever possible. I liked Queasel. She was fresh and youthful, a mere 1,500 years in your world, and had been lucky with her masters. Her first summoning was by a hermit living in the Jordanian deserts, who ate honey and dried tubers, and treated her with austere courtesy. When he died, she had escaped further service until a female French magician, 1400s, had uncovered her name. This master, too, was unusually clement, and never so much as jabbed her with the stimulating compass. By the time she reached Prague, Queasel's personality was thus less embittered than that of hoary old lags like me. Released from service there by the death of our master, she had since served magicians in China and Ceylon, without great incident. The first two nights of hunting, nothing happened, except for two Folliots getting swept away while hiding under London Bridge. But on the third night, loud crashing sounds were heard shortly before midnight, emanating from the west wing of the National Gallery. A ginny named Zeno was first on the scene, with me not far behind. Simultaneously, several magicians, including my master, arrived in a convoy. They encased the gallery in a dense nexus and ordered us into battle. Zeno displayed admirable bravery. Without hesitation, he flew straight to the source of the disturbance, and was never seen again. I was close on his heels, but owing to a dicky leg, and the complex layout of the gallery corridors, lagged behind, got lost, and didn't manage to reach the west wing until much later, by which time the marauder had departed. My excuses cut no ice with my master, who would have worked some inventive punishment on me had I not had the protection of knowing his name. As it was, he vowed to encase me in an iron cube, should I neglect to engage the enemy next time it appeared. I made soothing answers, perceiving he was addled with anxiety. His hair was dishevelled, his cuffs hung limp, his drainpipe trousers sagged loose upon his frame as if he had lost weight. I pointed this out to him in a sympathetic sort of way. "Eat more," I advised. "You're too thin. Currently the only bit of you that's growing outwards is your hair. If you don't watch out, you'll overbalance soon." He rubbed his red, sleepless eyes. "Will you stop going on about my hair? Eating is for people who have nothing else to do, Bartimaeus. I'm living on borrowed time, as are you. If you can destroy the enemy, all well and good. If not, at least get some information about its nature. Otherwise the night police are likely to take charge." "So, what's that to me?" He spoke seriously. "It'll mean my downfall." "So, what's that to me?" "Everything, if I bind you into the iron cube before I go. In fact, I'll make it a silver one, even more painful. And it'll happen, unless I get results soon." I ceased arguing then, there was little point. The boy had changed somewhat since I had last seen him, and not for the better. His master and his career had worked an unpleasant alchemy upon him. He was harder, harsher, and altogether more brittle. He also had even less of a sense of humour than previously, which was itself a remarkable achievement. One way and another, I looked forward to the end of my 6 weeks. But until then, surveillance, danger, and the rain. From my position beneath the statue, I could see down 3 of the 7 roads. Each one was lined with swanky shop fronts, dark and shadowy, secured by metal grills. Frail lamps shone in alcoves above the doors, but the rain was stronger than the light, and their radiance did not travel far. Water sluiced along the pavements. A sudden movement in the left-hand road. The cat's head turned. Something had dropped onto a first-floor window ledge. It perched there for a moment, a black smudge in the gloom. Then, in a single sinewy movement, poured itself over the ledge and down the wall, running zigzag through the grooves between the bricks like a thin rope of hot treacle. At the base of the wall it dropped onto the pavement, became a small black smudge again, grew legs, and began to splitter-splatter along the pavement in my direction. I watched all this. I did not move an inch. The smudge reached the crossroads, waded through the spreading puddles, and jumped onto the plinth. Here it was fully revealed as an elegant spaniel, with big brown eyes. She halted in front of the cat, paused, shook herself vigorously. A shower of water sprayed out and hit the cat directly in the face. "Thanks for that, Queasel," I said. "You must have spotted I wasn't quite wet enough." The spaniel blinked, stuck her head coyly on one side, and gave an apologetic bark. "And you can drop that old routine right now," I went on. "I'm not some human dunderhead who's going to be charmed by limpid eyes and a clot of wet fur. You forget I can see you quite clearly on the 7th plane, dorsal tubes and all."
"Can't help myself, Bartimaeus."
The spaniel raised a hind leg and scratched herself nonchalantly behind one ear.
"It's all this undercover work. It's becoming second nature to me.
You should think yourself lucky you're not sitting under a lamppost." I did not dignify this remark with a response. "So where have you been?" I said. "You're 2 hours later than agreed." The spaniel nodded wearily.
"False alarm at the silk warehouses. Pair of Folliots thought they'd seen something. Had to search the whole place thoroughly before giving the all clear. Stupid first-timers. Of course, I had to reprimand them."
"Nipped their ankles, did you?" A small, crooked smile flickered across the spaniel's muzzle.
"Something like that."
I shifted across to allow Queasel a bit of room on the centre of the plinth. Not that it was any less damp there, particularly, but it seemed a comradely thing to do. She shuffled up and huddled alongside. "Can't really blame them," I said. "They're jumpy. It's all this rain. And what happened to Zeno? Being summoned night after night doesn't help either. It wears your essence down after a while."
Queasel gave me a side glance out of those big brown puppy-dog eyes. "Your essence too, Bartimaeus?"
I was speaking rhetorically. "I'm all right." To prove it, I arched my back in a big, luxuriant cat-stretch, the kind that runs from whisker-tip to tail-tuft. "Ah, that's better. Nope, I've seen worse than this, and so have you. Just some pumped-up imp lurking in the shadows. It's nothing we can't handle once we find him."
"That's what Zeno said, as I recall."
"I don't remember what Zeno said. Where's your master tonight? Safely under cover?"
The spaniel gave a small growl. "He claims to be within signalling distance. The Whitehall office, allegedly. In fact, he's probably holed up in some magician's bar with a bottle in one hand and a girl in the other."
I grunted. "That sort, is he?"
"Yep. What's yours like?"
"Oh, the same. Worse, if anything. He'd have girl and bottle in the same hand." Manifestly untrue. Despite his crimped shirts and flowing mane, or perhaps because of them, I had seen no evidence as yet that Nathaniel even knew what a girl was. If he'd ever met one, chances are they'd both have run screaming in opposite directions. But in common with most djinn, I generally preferred to exaggerate my master's foibles in conversation. The spaniel gave a sympathetic whimper. I got slowly to my feet.
"Well, we'd better swap circuits," I said. "I'll start by patrolling up to Soho and back. You can head between the posh shops down Gibbet Street to the museum district behind.
I might rest a bit, Queasel said. I'm tired.
Yes. Well, good luck.
Good luck.
The spaniel rested her head gloomily across her paws. I trotted out into the driving rain, to the edge of the plinth, bent my legs, ready for the off. A little voice sounded behind me.
Bartimaeus?
Yes, Queasel?
Oh, nothing.
What?
It's just... well, it's not just the Folliots. I'm jumpy, too.
The cat trotted back and sat beside her for a moment, curling its tail around her affectionately.
You don't need to be, I said. It's already past midnight, and neither of us has seen anything.
On every occasion when this thing has attacked, it's done so by midnight. Your only fear should be the boredom of a long, tedious vigil.
I suppose so.
The rain drummed all around, like a solid thing. We were cocooned within it.
Between ourselves, Queasel said softly, what do you think it is?
My tail twitched. I don't know, and I'd rather not find out. So far it's killed everything it's come across. My advice is keep vigilant watch, and if you see something unusual coming, scamper the other way pronto.
But we have to destroy it. That's our charge.
Well, destroy it by running away.
How?
Make it chase you. Then lure it into heavy traffic. Something like that. I don't know, do I? Just don't do what Zeno did and attack it head on.
The spaniel heaved a sigh. I liked Zeno.
A little too eager. That was his trouble.
There was a heavy silence.
Queasel said nothing. The incessant rain beat down. Well, I said at last, I'll see you.
Yes.
I hopped down from the plinth and ran, tail out, through the rain and across the waterlogged street. A single jump took me up onto a low wall beside a deserted cafe. There, in a series of leaps and bounds, wall to porch, porch to ledge, ledge to tiles, I negotiated my athletic, feline way until I had sprung up onto the guttering of the nearest, lowest roof. I took a quick look back down into the square. The spaniel was a forlorn and lonely speck, hunched in the shadows beneath the horse's belly. A gust of rain blocked her from my view. I turned and set off along the roof crests. In that part of town, the ancient houses huddled close together, leaning forwards like gossiping hunchbacks, so that their gables almost met above the street. Even in the rain, it was thus an easy matter for an agile cat to make its way swiftly in whatever direction it fancied. And so I did. Anyone lucky enough to be peering out of their shuttered window might have glimpsed a flash of grey lightning, nothing more, leaping from chimney pot to weather vane, streaking across slates and thatch, never putting a paw wrong. I halted for a moment in the valley between two steeply pitching roofs and scanned the skies longingly. It would have been quicker for me to get to Soho by flying, but I had orders to remain near the ground, keeping my eye out for trouble there. No one knew exactly how the enemy arrived or departed, but my master had a hunch it was somehow earthbound. He doubted it was anything like a jinni at all. The cat rubbed some moisture from its face with a paw and prepared for another jump. A big one this time. A proper road's width. At that moment, everything was illuminated by a sudden burst of orange light. I saw the tiles and chimney-pots beside me, the lowering clouds above, and even the raindrop curtains hanging all around. Then darkness fell again. The orange flare was the agreed emergency signal. It came from close behind. Queasel. She had found something, or something had found her. The time for rules was past. I turned. Even as I did so, I made the change. An eagle, with black crest and golden wingtips, launching itself in haste into the sky. I had travelled only 2 blocks from the place where the portly horseman guarded the 7 roads. Even if she had moved, Queasel would not be far away. It would take less than 10 seconds to get back. No problem. I would be in time. 3 seconds later, I heard her scream.